Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something really crucial. Why is it that some genuinely brilliant innovations, even when they get the green light from regulators, just stall? They don't seem to reach the patients who could benefit.
It's a huge bottleneck, absolutely. You can have amazing science, fantastic tech, but if it doesn't actually get picked up and used consistently in clinics, well, its potential just evaporates.
Exactly. So that's our mission for this deep dive. Understanding clinical adoption, we're going beyond just, you know, getting regulatory approval. We're digging into insights from the 2025 Translational Resource Center and Networking Exchange, specifically Panel 1, Best Practices for Generating Clinical Evidence That Drives Adoption.
Right. The real goal here is figuring out how new tech actually gets embedded, how it becomes part of the routine, delivering value in the real world, day in, day out. Not just a flash in the pan.
Sustained use, that's the key phrase. Okay, so let's unpack this. A veteran in the field, Dr. Michael Newman, kicked things off with a really core idea. He said adoption isn't the initial sale.
No, it's about sustained use over time. That was his big point.
Yeah, and he mentioned how many products, especially clinical ones, need that ongoing training, that support, long after someone's bought it.
And he linked that directly to this concept of right-to-left thinking in business planning. It's kind of flipping the usual process on its head.
Okay, right-to-left thinking. So instead of starting with, hey, I have this cool idea, you start from the end.
Exactly. You start from the goal, actual, long-term, sustained adoption by clinicians and patients.
Yeah.
And then you work backwards from there. Every decision gets filtered through that lens.
So it's less, can we build it, and more, will they actually use it consistently? Will it fit? Will it stick?
Precisely. It avoids that common trap of developing a technically brilliant solution for a problem that maybe doesn't quite map onto the real-world workflow.
Or maybe it adds too much complexity.
Right. We've all seen tech that was amazing on paper, but just created too much friction in a busy practice. It has to solve a real need without making life harder.
Okay, that makes total sense. So, if that's the mindset, what are the actual pillars? Dr. Newman laid out five essential elements for the business plan. First one seems pretty fundamental. Clear patient benefit or clinician value.
Yes, it has to help the patient feel better or function better, or it needs to help the clinician, maybe make them more money or make a procedure easier, faster, better than the old way.
If it doesn't tick one of those boxes,
it's likely dead in the water. Which leads right into the second element. You need strong evidence, but crucially, translated evidence.
Ah, and this is where it gets interesting, because it's not just about getting that FDA or EMA thumbs up, is it?
Not at all. He was really clear. Regulatory approval is necessary, obviously, but it is absolutely not sufficient for commercial success, especially in dentistry.
He called it not a license to print money. Why is dentistry so different there?
Well, it often operates outside the larger hospital or insurance systems you see in general medicine. Dentists are often small business owners. It's just a unique market dynamic.
So that 510K clearance from the FDA, which basically says a device is safe and similar to something already out there.
Right. It shows substantial equivalence.
That doesn't actually mean dentists will buy it or use it long term.
Exactly. It doesn't guarantee adoption.
Mm-hmm.
So the real question becomes, how do you generate the right kind of evidence? The kind that actually convinces clinicians to change their practice.
And that's the shift from efficacy to effectiveness, right? Efficacy being, does it work in perfect lab conditions, which is often the FDA's focus.
Correct.
Versus effectiveness, which is, does it actually work in the messy real world with real patients in everyday clinics?
That's the bullseye. That's what drives adoption. The evidence has to show real world results. It needs to be generalizable, and it has to matter to the patient.
Which brings us to things like COAs, clinical outcomes assessments.
Yes, and specifically patient-reported outcomes, or PROs.
Yeah.
These are critical. They capture the patient's actual experience, how they feel, how they function. It's their voice.
So less about the scan showing improvement, more about the patient saying, I can eat without pain now.
Precisely. And Dr. Irina Dragan really highlighted practice-based research networks, PBRNs, like the McGuire Institute, which, you know, some panelists helped found decades ago.
Right.
These PBRNs, networks of actual practicing clinics, are probably the best way to get that robust real-world evidence.
From practices that are GCP trained, meaning they follow strict standards for clinical research, even in a normal practice setting.
Exactly. So the data is reliable.
Mm.
And AI is starting to play a role here, too, in designing better trials.
And they touched on quantifying pain in dentistry, something about an H. Creedon grant, and even using personality frameworks.
Yeah, the OCEAN acronym, openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, neuroticism, understanding how personality might affect a patient's pain experience. It's all about getting a deeper, more holistic view of effectiveness.
Fascinating. So, okay, element one, real value. Element two, strong, real-world, patient-focused evidence. What's next? What's often missed?
Element three, education and training. You absolutely cannot underestimate this, especially if your product requires a specific technique.
It's not just handing over the device.
No, you have to provide the why, the education behind it, and the how, the actual hands-on training to use it right.
And this is where key opinion leaders, KOLs, come in. The trusted voices.
Yes, KOLs, clinical role models, they act as translators, carrying that information from the research bench to the dental chair side. They influence buying decisions, sure, but they also help ensure people use the product successfully. It becomes a cycle.
Okay, that makes sense. Element four sounds pretty direct, a financial incentive for the dentist.
Yep, simple but powerful. Does this new tech save the practice money in the long run, or does it allow them to generate more revenue? It usually needs to do one or the other.
It's a business reality. And what about the cost to the patient?
Well, the dentist needs to feel confident justifying that cost. And it's interesting, psychologically, patients might pay more readily to, say, maintain an expensive implant they're invested in compared to routine stuff.
Huh. And the company making the product?
They've got to manage their manufacturing costs. That gives them flexibility on pricing for the real world. And clinicians can check things like CDT codes.
The standard billing codes for procedures?
Right. And insurance rates to see if a product's price point actually works for integration into their billing structure.
Got it. And the last one, element five.
Support for the ecosystem. Companies should support educational institutions, like Harvard School of Dental Medicine was mentioned, and professional organizations like the American Academy of Periodontology.
Why? What's the direct benefit there?
Because those institutions and organizations share the company's goal, ultimately. They want to get new, effective products and techniques into the hands of students and practicing members. It fosters innovation from the ground up.
Okay, connecting some dots here. Carrie Hartle made a really important point linking a few of these. Dental adoption is just different from medical adoption.
It really is. Dentists are often running their own show, their own business. They're entrepreneurs as much as clinicians.
And they have these long-term relationships with patients in their community.
Exactly. Which means that clinical data designed only for regulatory clearance, like that 510K.
It often just isn't enough for them. It doesn't answer their practical long-term questions.
Right. Peggy Hansen, who incredibly has 46 FDA clearances under her belt, she really hammered this home. You need that voice of customer input, understanding what users really need way beyond the regulatory minimums.
So that long-term adoption view, it has to be baked into the business plan from day one, using that robust GCP quality, real-world evidence we talked about.
Absolutely.
But, okay, let's say you get the product out there, you have early adopters. How do you make it stick? How do you get sustained use?
It's an ongoing effort. It's about making sure the clinician's experience stays positive. It's about the company finding ways to maybe enhance the benefits over time and promoting those successes.
So continued support is key.
Crucial. Relentless support. That means great customer service, a sales team that's genuinely helpful, not just pushing units, and importantly, continued investment by the company in actually advancing the field, meeting those evolving patient needs.
Now, here's something that genuinely surprised me from the discussion, something Carrie Hartle brought up. Dentistry as a leader in regenerative medicine.
Yeah, isn't that something? It kind of flips the script.
Totally. How does that work?
Well, she shared this great story about orthopedic surgeons actually turning to dentists for the latest insights on things like bone regeneration, even a spine surgeon learning from his dentist wife.
Wow.
And it makes sense when you think about it. The mouth, the dental space, it has advantages like really high vascularization, great blood supply, which helps healing.
But also big challenges, right? Bacteria, biofilms.
Huge challenges. So dentists have had to develop really innovative solutions to regenerate tissue in that complex environment. And those solutions, those experiences, turn out to be incredibly valuable for other medical fields.
So dentistry isn't just following along, it's actually leading in some areas of regenerative medicine.
That was the assertion. A market leader and a regenerative medicine leader.
That's amazing. It really shows how that practical, problem-solving mindset in dentistry can drive serious innovation.
It really does. Innovation pops up where you have tough problems and motivated people trying to solve them directly for their patients.
So let's wrap this up. Thinking about everything we've discussed, what's the main message for our listeners, whether they're innovators themselves or investors or clinicians?
I think the core takeaway is that real, lasting clinical adoption, the kind that truly makes a difference, hinges on evidence, yes, but specifically patient-centered, real-world evidence. It demands smart business planning that thinks user-first right from the beginning.
And that relentless, ongoing support from the company.
Absolutely. It's all about proving that real-world value day in and day out and making it easy and beneficial for clinicians to keep using the technology. It's about sustained use in practice.
Okay, so here's a final thought for you, the listener, to kind of mull over. Thinking about how dentistry holds these unexpected keys for orthopedics, a little seemingly unrelated field, maybe one completely outside your normal view, might actually hold the missing piece or the next big insight for your work or your next innovation. Where are those hidden connections waiting?